Big Blue Insider is on News Radio 630 WLAP and the iHeartRadio app. To interact with the show, call us at 859-280-2287. That's 859-280-CATS. Or you can tweet us at Big Blue Insider 1. Now, here's Dick Gabriel.
Welcome to the Big Blue Insider on a pretty nice Monday, a little chilly. Welcome to spring weather in Kentucky, but it is getting nicer and nicer. And as the flowers begin to bloom, that tells us we are getting close to a Final Four. And of course, it doesn't include, nor will it, the University of Kentucky. But there is UK basketball news today. We will talk about that. We'll talk Kentucky football tonight. Josh Moore, the Herald Leader, who has been, of course, involved in every Zoom call possible with UK coaches and players. I've had a chance to sit in on some of those. And we're going to talk about Indiana's new coach with my buddy Jay Query, who has covered Indiana sports up in Indianapolis for quite a long time. And he goes back to the Knight era. And he, like me, believes that the two teams ought to be playing. And I have a feeling, I can't remember how much we talked about that last time he was on, but, you know, I firmly believe that it ought to be a home and home. So we'll talk about that as well. But we've got to talk a lot about not just the tournament, Billy Rutledge, but the story that broke about an hour and a half ago that the Wildcats are adding a new player. You and I were talking before we went on the air about all the rumors and social media traffic that happened over the weekend, and we'll double back to that here in just a moment. But John Calipari goes to the waiver wire again. The transfer portal door opens, and who steps out but Kellen Grady, who is a grad transfer from Davidson. And before you roll your eyes about getting a player from Davidson, keep in mind that that's where Steph Curry played his college basketball. Also know that this kid is 6'5", love big guards, 6'5", and scored more than 2,000 points in his four seasons at Davidson and averaged at least 17 a game in all 4 years. What did Kentucky miss this past season? Well, a lot. But chief among the ingredients on this team, Billy, was backcourt, consistent backcourt scoring. And I know nothing about this young man except for the numbers that he posted. And yes, I know Davidson doesn't play in a Power 5 conference. I don't care. If the kid is capable of putting up those kinds of numbers at Davidson, with all due respect, surround him with better players. And I'm not saying they're all better than they were at Davidson, but surround him with talent, and you never know what he's going to do. I got a pretty good idea. I think this is a good get.
I love it. This guy looks like a bucket. He does.
Yeah.
With all the 2,000 career points and 245 threes over those 4 years, it's exactly what Kentucky needs. And we saw how the offense benefited this year when a guy like Dante Allen was put into the game. Just the threat of him shooting spaced open the floor and allowed some guys to get inside. So if you can put a guy that started for 4 years, has over 2,000 career points, is 6'5", and is used to being in those pressure situations, unlike these freshmen who are here year in and year out, then not only will the beginning of the schedule be favorable for Kentucky with some more experience, but you got to think, what does it all come down to the NCAA tournament, right? It's guard play, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And we've seen that, and we'll touch on that here in a minute. But Grady scored exactly 2,002 career points, 47% shooter, made 243 pointers during his career, at least 51 in all 4 years, and this past season hit 38% from beyond the arc, 21 times had at least 4 3-pointers, and yeah, you know, it was kind of cool. He topped the 2,000-point mark in his last game. Only five other players at Davidson, five other Wildcats, have hit that mark. Four times all-conference, twice first team. I mean, he has a terrific resume. But as Billy said, and we all know this, you're only going to go as far in the NCAA as your guards take you. And somebody posted, I think it was the NCAA, the March Madness site, posted a clip from the 2017 Kentucky team when I think it was P.J. Washington blocked a shot and De'Aaron Fox hit a big shot at the other end. I mean, it was cool seeing that kind of efficiency, that kind of play. And you go back to that Kentucky team, and it's been a dry spell. By Calipari standards, we know it's been a dry spell. But I keep going back to that team and that North Carolina game and how tight that game. Of course, Carolina goes on to win the championship that year. And I really believe, as close as those teams were in that game, I thought Kentucky was better. Yes, I know North Carolina won. But 10 times, I think Kentucky wins 7. And you know, again, that shot does not go down for North Carolina. Kentucky makes a shot here, makes some free throws there. You know, and people aren't wringing their hands about Calipari. And we keep talking about this as well. Kansas State game. That was not a great Kansas State team. But as we all know, the bracket just fell open for Kentucky. I mean, it was a tough draw for the Wildcats, which turned into a great draw after some upsets. And again, Kentucky just clanks free throw after free throw and misses another shot at the Final Four, which brings us to Alabama.
Oh, it was infuriating, dude.
Yeah, it really was. If you were rooting for Alabama, imagine how Alabama fans feel. Kentucky fans know how Alabama fans feel. I mean, the SEC Player of the Year, who was not a good free throw shooter, bricks a couple of them, bricked half of his shots all year. But he wasn't the only one. That's what was maddening. It's like it became contagious. And, you know, and people like to say that shooting is contagious. And I think really mentally it is. I think when you see your teammates missing and you step to the free throw line, I'm thinking, oh, man, Billy just missed two. I got to make these. Because if I don't, then, you know, that kind of stuff. And it just compounds itself. And then they hit the shot to send it into overtime.
Oh, that was the best moment of March so far, Dick. Man. I know my neighbors heard me and my girlfriend scream when that shot went down.
Well, and people were screaming as well about UCLA not fouling. And they talked about it not enough, in my opinion, on the telecast. They didn't talk about it enough. I'm a huge fan of that strategy. But here's the thing. You got to catch the ball handler, to foul him. And that kid, was it Quinterly? Yeah. Did such a great job of streaking up the court. Here come the UCLA defenders. They're going to double him and maybe hack him. And he fires the pass to the big guy, to Reese. And what do you know, did they ever officially say how long that shot was?
They didn't, but I would say it's a logo shot by all means.
Just
of
about.
When yeah. he was standing. And it was yeah. his first points of the game.
Unbelievable.
Dude. Zero points before the man launched that shot.
Yeah, yeah. And a defender, the big kid for UCLA, who tore up Alabama. Inside.
Riley?
Yeah, he did the right thing. He came as close as he could without fouling. But if it's me, I'd make a token defensive appearance and then step back and say, big guy, have at it. You haven't done anything all game. But his form was money. And, yeah, that was – I just started laughing when I saw that. You know, but part of me thought now Alabama's going to relax and going to get their butts kicked. And I didn't think it was as bad as it would be as bad as it was. But that UCLA kid came out and hit that first three. I thought, uh-oh, you better answer right now.
And it felt like the camera showed Johnny Juzang after every whistle.
Oh, yeah.
In overtime when he was sitting on the bench.
He's had a great tournament, you know. And I texted Rex Chapman, and lo and behold, he answered me. Love Rex to death, but he gets messages from so many people that he doesn't often respond right away. But 2 years ago, prior to Juzang's rookie year at Kentucky, his only year at Kentucky, we did something different for the NCAA, for the UK TV network. This is before, of course, the contract changed hands. And we sat down with each player, and T.J. Beisner set this up for us. We sat down with each player, and it took about 3 hours. It was on photo day, not picture day, not when everybody comes in, but it was when they first put on their jerseys and they posed for pictures for, you know, the internet and the yearbook and stuff like that. And so they would come into one of the locker rooms at Memorial Coliseum. And, in fact, it was the old UK locker room. at Memorial Coliseum. And like Rex was telling them, this is where we dressed when I played here, when we practiced. And they were all looking around like, oh, really? Because it's, you know, it looks like just your high school gym locker room. So anyway, we sat down and Rex interviewed every player. And I would throw some questions at him, and Steve Moss would throw a couple of questions at him. But I remember when Juzang sat down, and this kid has a million-dollar smile, very outgoing, different kind of kid. He's from California, and there is some different, not like, you know, hey, dude, kind of difference, but just, you know, it's just a little different, but very confident. And I remember Rex asked him, you know, why are you here? What's your job going to be? What's your role? And he kind of thought for a second, and then he broke out in this huge grin, and he goes, I'm going to score the basketball. And Rex started clapping, and Rex reached out and slapped hands with him. He's like, yep. You know, Johnny said, I'm not going to lie to you. He said, I'm here to score the basketball. Now, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. But, you know, that's what I do. That's why they brought me here, that kind of thing. And it was so funny. And it was so, for lack of a better term, real. But I really enjoyed that exchange with Rex. And I enjoyed all of them. Those kids from that team were a lot of fun. So, and I can understand. Did you see the pregame TV piece they did on him?
I did not.
What they talked to him about was obviously what he's done in the tournament and all that. But it gets to the transfer. And there was some mention of his role at Kentucky, and I'll get back to that in a minute. But he talked quite a bit about, relatively speaking, about the pandemic and about the uncertainty of what was happening. Especially, that's one thing we got to remember, especially in California, which, because of people's silliness, was hit really hard. People that just weren't complying, you know, with social distancing, with wearing a mask, things like that. And California, it was just awful. And that's why he went home. You know, it wasn't because he was unhappy here. Although his dad and who else did they interview? One other person they interviewed for the piece said something about his role at Kentucky as opposed to what he's doing now. He's more of a this or that. Well, yeah. He is at UCLA, might have been Mick Cronin, and Cronin didn't knock UK, but his role at UCLA is different because he's playing more. You know, remember here he came off the bench, and because obviously there was a deep roster, and by the end of his only year here, I think he showed what he could do in the future at Kentucky, and had he stayed here, I think we would have seen a lot of what we saw and what we've seen for UCLA. Don't you think we'd see that, especially this year, with all the other guys struggling?
Oh, absolutely. You know, that's just the animal that is Kentucky basketball, though,
yeah.
Dick. It churns out these players sometimes too quick for the program's own good. And in this case, you know, Johnny Juzang was kind of run off. I guess not really run off,
no,
but
no,
he
no.
needed
they
to
needed
do.
They needed him to stay.
Well, he didn't need to stay. I'll say good on Mick Cronin and UCLA for getting him immediately eligible for being homesick
sure.
and moving back home to California.
Yeah.
Because it's certainly worked out for them in the right favor. But,
oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know,
well,
what could have been with that tournament being canceled and everything Juzang did?
Yeah. No, there's no question about it. No, they needed Juzang to stay here. That was the plan. And it's interesting how, especially with Devin Askew, people are charting the transfers from Kentucky, the California kids who've gone home. But what do you do? And you've got a shot. Do you not take those kids? You know, when you've got a kid from California who's highly touted and expresses interest in your program, do you back away and say, you know what? We've just not had a lot of great luck with kids from California. Thanks anyway. You know, and then they come back to haunt you sometimes. So I don't know. It depends on the kid, but Devin Askew says he's here for the long haul. We'll take a break. Coming up the bottom of the hour, Josh Moore will talk Kentucky football. Jake Query in hour number two about the new coach at Indiana and how that might affect the series with Kentucky and how it might affect college basketball in general. We'll come back and talk about Kenny Payne, about the NCAA tournament, and we'll take your calls at 280-2287. Tweet us at Big Blue Insider 1. At 7:30 tonight, we'll step aside for the Nick Mungione Show here on your home for the Wildcats, 6:30 WLAP.
This is the home of the Wildcats. 630 WLAP.
Welcome back to the Big Blues Insider. Dick Gabriel, Billy Rudd. Let's just go to the phones on line one. And Joe is on from right here in Lexington. How you doing, Joe?
Fine. Good evening, Dick, Billy. Three things real quick. One, I really haven't seen Gonzaga play this year. And I've heard a lot of people talk about the way the college game is going, like the pros shoot a lot of threes or take it to the basket. But, I mean, I've never seen teams miss as many layups at the basket. And I have seen a lot of basketball in the tournament, and I've seen missed threes take so many teams out of games.
As I said, I
haven't seen Gonzaga play a lot, but Michigan ran a more what I consider true offense yesterday than any team I think I'd seen in this tournament, which ironically, or I found a bit ironic when you consider how much the Fab Five was criticized for playing street ball, and there's Juwan Howard coaching them.
Right.
The second thing, I know how much you love baseball, Dick, and I do too, and I haven't heard all the final rules changes. I know I still think it's DH in the American League, not the National League. I still think they're going to start and run around second in extra innings.
Yeah.
I mean, for me, I just hate to see baseball gimmicked up like this. And I know they're doing it for fans because nobody's got an attention span anymore. But and I would hate to see baseball go. But if you have to gimmick it up every year to keep people interested, I don't know. Just have Triple A teams or whatever. I mean, I know it's not going to happen, but it just makes me sad. And the third thing I wanted to ask you is, and I haven't seen final totals, but everything I have read is that viewership was down during the pandemic when you thought it would be up. And I just wonder, I know that new contract the NFL just signed is huge, but I just wonder if sports is – it's still going to play a huge part on the national landscape, but it looks to me like the core, your core fan base is going to be the majority. You're just not going to have a lot of secondary fans anymore. I'll hang up and listen to y'all's thoughts on that. Thank you, Dick.
Appreciate it. Giving us a lot to think about. First of all, I hadn't seen much of Gonzaga either. I'd read a lot about Gonzaga, but I just hadn't stayed up late and watched them. And like Michigan, I think they have a really it's a fun team to watch because they are so good at running their offense. They have really talented kids who know their roles, and their offense leads to high percentage shots, either layups or kids who know their roles and hit shots. They don't depend, neither team really, Michigan nor Gonzaga, that much on the three-pointer. Neither does Baylor. You know, not that that's a bad thing, but, you know, Alabama wasn't hitting yesterday, though they got a three-pointer when it desperately needed one. But I really like watching those teams play. And he makes a great point about Howard coaching Michigan. He's got them running at a great clip right now. The Fab Five was criticized for playing quote-unquote street ball, but that wasn't the case. The reason people criticized the Fab Five was, for one thing, they were unique in that they were so young and had swagger, and they were the first team where everybody was wearing those long shorts, and so they kind of came off that way, but they were a disciplined team. They really were. Otherwise, you don't have the success they had. They didn't win a championship, but you don't have the success they had by not being disciplined. And I really think that's what you've seen in Gonzaga and Michigan. You've got experienced, older players who know what they're doing.
Dick, do you think that would have been Alabama's possession if the Fab Five have never existed and long shorts never became a thing in basketball?
Yes.
In instant replay we didn't spend 5 minutes on?
Yes, I do. If they had been shorter shorts, there's no question that would have been the situation. You're right about that. Joe gave us a couple other points. We'll have to pick them up after the break. But, if you haven't watched much of the tournament, by now, the teams that have made – they've gone as far as they have. It's funny because they are experienced and they are executing at a really high level. And after the what we watch from Kentucky this year, it's fun to watch. Josh Moore's next on 630 WLAP.
You're listening to Big Blue Insider with Dick Gabriel on News Radio 630 WLAP and WLAP.com.
We wear short shorts.
So, Billy, did you just type in the word shorts and see what came up?
No, I remember this song from a long time ago, but I don't remember this old-timey video. This looks like it's from the 60s.
Welcome back to the Big Blue Insider. Coming up in just a moment, we'll connect with Josh Moore, but I did want to touch on, and we'll get his opinion on one of these, on the points that Joe made. He was talking about baseball and some of the rule changes. They have not made their way to the major leagues, but they are trying them in some of the independent leagues, some of the minor leagues. And I'm surprised at the positive response I've heard from some, mostly media people, to the runner on second rule in extra innings. And I can't remember if they're doing it wherever they're doing it, like right away in extras or after the 10th or 11th or 12th inning. I don't know. But I've heard some people say, you know, yeah, I kind of like that. And they pointed out that it's done in women's softball. It has been done that way, and I'm not entirely sure, again, what the rule is there. But it's been done and successfully done in softball. But, yeah, I can see that speeding up a game, but I'm not sure how much I'd like that either. Some of the rules, yeah, I like the automatic look. You know, intentional walk, point to first, take it. I know bad things can happen when you're trying to throw four pitches, but how often does that happen? To me, that's just – one way to speed up the game. But I will tell you this, my partner Doug Flynn makes a great point, and he sounds like an old fuddy-duddy on this, but you can't do away with walk-up music, but think about when you played Little League Baseball, if you did, when it was your turn to hit, no matter what happened ahead of you, weren't you at the plate holding the other kid's bat?
Yes.
At the end of the play?
Every time.
No, they're not doing that. Yeah, but they're not doing that now. They're waiting at the dugout until they hear their music. And then they take their time walking up to the plate so they can hear as much of it as they want or as they can. I fully agree that you got to speed up that process. I fully agree with that. As for viewership, let's bring in Josh Moore from the Herald Leader. He didn't know I was going to ask him about this. How are you, sir?
I'm well, Dick. I brought me on for all the baseball. I'm ready. Let's go.
Well, let me ask you about – we had a caller ask about viewership and how surprised he was that numbers have been down during the pandemic, where you'd think everybody is locked in and would be, you know, desperate to watch anything they could. I don't know. Have you thought much about that? Do you have any theories on that before I share mine?
I mean, to me, the thing about with viewership and sports, and especially with the context of the pandemic, I think it's – you know, when I was covering high school sports, people got really, you know, and it's a timely topic, I guess, with the attendance of the Sweet 16, since that's the marquee event for high schools in Kentucky, and just how much that, you know, has dropped. And it's like, you know, if you compare it to other states, it's still really great, but it's, you know, it has, you know, there has been a decline that's been noticeable. And I think, you know, I kind of attribute the same answer to the viewership with sports is, yeah, everybody's inside, but it's, you know, you there was a gap there where there wasn't anything on TV. You know, I think maybe horse racing was probably the only thing going, the only game in town, and, you know, people find other stuff to do and other stuff to watch. And, I mean, I think Netflix is as big a reason for all this stuff dropping as anything. And people, you know, it's funny, I have, I've not had cable for a while, but I still have the over-the-air antennas, like the bunny ears. And so that's how I watch, you know, like CBS and ABC and that kind of stuff. And in Lexington, I know it's not this way everywhere, but in Lexington, you can get 25, 30 channels just doing that. It's all, you know, like rerun channels and stuff. And I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of people my age, though, that don't even do that, which I find, you know, it's like it's free TV. It literally costs like $10 for one of those antennas. You can get, you know, TV for free.
Yep.
So, I don't know. I think that's the biggest reason is just people have diversified in their interests, and it's you know, I don't know how you capture that and how you get, you know, for a while I kind of thought there was maybe a a miracle pill or whatever for this kind of stuff, but I don't know. The more it kind of continues going that direction, the more I think it's just kind of how things are.
I agree with you. I think that people discovered there's more to watch. And the other thing, too, is, you know, there's been some overlap of sports that we didn't have in the past. And, you know, college football in the spring right now and some of the leagues and things like that. It's just it's hard to judge with the way things have sort of been scrambled because of the pandemic. But I think what it has shown us is there are better and different ways to do things. You know, for instance, you know, I cover volleyball, UK volleyball, and the coaches really like this back-to-back, like a two-game series, a two-match series, whereas you used to play, you know, Kentucky would play Tennessee early in the conference schedule and then later in a conference schedule. Well, this year they play in all the teams that played everybody back-to-back. It cuts down on travel. You know, you can say, well, class time on a Wednesday, Thursday series. You can go to class via Zoom. We learned that. So I think the world is – we've forced to change, Josh, but it's going to be so cool to see a stadium full of fans again, though, when they start playing college football, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. And I think that'll I think there will be an appetite for that kind of thing, and it'll be fun. You know, it'll be interesting to see what UK allows and what the SEC allows, and I mean, you know, I'm optimistic. I'm kind of thinking it's going to be, you know, full capacity. I have nothing but my gut, you know, to go on that. And last year proved it seemed like every time I made a guess about something last year, it was, you know, I might as well have been, X'd out as soon as I said it. But it'll be interesting to see how that goes. And I sure want to see fans in, because I've had the privilege of obviously being in the press box, and so it was fairly normal. You know, I mean, obviously, you know, we're separated a little bit more and wearing masks and that kind of stuff. But, you know, for me, it was at home games, it was a pretty normal experience, you know, relatively.
Yeah.
And for fans, you know, if you can, you know, if you're allowed to have fans, if we're allowed to have fans in Kroger Field in a normal setting that, you know, maybe, I don't know, maybe they have to wear a mask early on or something. But if you especially get people in there and it's normal and it's, you know, complete capacity, I just think that would be, you know, that'll be incredible. And, that, you know, these players deserve it. The coaches deserve it. And you know, us covering it deserve it, because it's just, you know, you just knew, you know, even though they had, 12,000 fans there, it just felt weird.
Yeah. Yeah. It really did. Last time you were on, we talked a little bit about the quarterback situation, which is kind of the standard question in the spring. But let me toss this at you, and I've been talking a lot about this of late. It is a huge part of the story of spring football is the new OC, the new running backs coach, the new offense, a new starting quarterback. But I don't know about you, but I think the loss of Quentin Bohanna, of Jamin Davis, Boogie Watson, I think the state of the defense this spring and the rebuild there, I think, is as vital as any chapter in Kentucky football since Stoops took over. Almost 10 years ago. What do you think?
Yeah, that has been overshadowed, understandably, but it's significant. You're lucky, you know, if you're Kentucky. I was actually writing about this earlier. You're lucky that you have Josh Pascal there, you know, on the like in each of those spots, each of those areas, you have some guys that you at least have some, you know, quote unquote cornerstones. You have,
right,
you know, Josh Pascal on the line, and you have DeAndre Square, you know, back there behind him, and Jordan Wright too. On the outside, and so you've got some pieces that you can count on, guys that you know are going to play and make plays and do everything they can to be on the field for, you know, as many snaps as they need to be. It's really this spring and going into summer is going to be a lot about building the depth around those guys and just seeing, you know, how they, just what they can deliver there, because you know, especially on the defensive line, you got Marquand McCall, a guy that's played a lot, physically, you know, you could have maybe made a case that he should have even been playing ahead of Bohanna, you know, if he'd been there, like if he'd made the leap, you know, that you needed a guy like that, to, you know, because obviously Bohanna was great, you know, but physically McCall is definitely a force, and he's a guy, it sounds like they're pretty high on as far as thinking that he's, you know, matured. I think for him, a lot of it's been a maturation process and needing to
absolutely,
you know, maybe just grow up a little bit. He's a fun loving guy, and he's great to talk to. And I don't mean that to say he needs to mature like he's like a, you know, he's a brat or immature or anything. But you know, just guys just need to grow up sometimes and take on that, you know, take the bull by the horns and do that. And so I think those two guys, you feel really good about it. So it's really about, you know, who starts a D tackle and who, you know, who is going to be kind of backing up. Because you need a lot of bodies, and they have a lot of bodies. They have a lot of talented guys, but they're just all guys that have not really played. They've either, you know, not been on campus very long, or they've been, you know, it's like I look at a guy like Abule Fitzgerald who hasn't been on, or a body Fitzgerald and hasn't, you know, he's played some, but he's been in the program a long time, and so you wonder, like, what's his role? You know, what does a guy like that look like in something like this? So it'll be interesting to see how that all shakes out, especially up front.
Josh, along with a lot of the new faces that Dick mentioned, a new thing that will be happening with this Kentucky football program is the ending of a tradition. No spring game this spring. What do you think? What are your thoughts on that? Some of the pros and cons of the spring game for a football program, and do you think it should remain?
Yeah, I think it's definitely more of a convenient. You know, it's like it was a good time to not have one. Am I wrong? Was there not a spring game a few years ago too when they were doing some renovations? Am I misremembering that? I feel like there might have been another year under Stoops where they didn't have a spring game, but I don't remember.
They might not have had a formalized spring game, but it seems like they've always had something.
Yeah, maybe they used like the practice facility or something and did it that year or something. It's weird. I will say it's strange, but I don't know that it's. I definitely don't see it as like a, you know, this is their chance to take the spring game away and never have one again. I think it, you know, obviously the, you know, Kroger being a vaccination site is a good thing for everybody, and I do think they're probably. You know, I think there is an appetite for fans to see, you know, see all the stuff they're talking about. And I know the players have, you know, been our advocates a little bit. It seemed like, you know, they want the media to be able to come in and watch it. And, you know, because it's one thing to hear the players and coaches talking about how cool and good and awesome things look. It's another thing if, you know, not to say we're better than them or anything, but it's different when you bring in media and they can kind of share their own observations about how things look and what, you know, it just adds a different, you know, dimension to it. If you could have that happen, it at least would, you know, satiate some of the appetite, I think, for fans to be able to, you know, just hear about this offense. But I think it's, you know, it's good. If you were ever going to have a year where it's, you know, you didn't have that game, though, it's nice to have an extra practice or two instead to, you know, just work on things and be able to prepare for, you know, the summer and figure out what you need to work on throughout that period after the spring and then go into the fall, you know, really trying to sort out the depth. Because that's the other thing. I mean, I think if you were watching the spring game, you maybe would get even more of a false sense of, like, kind of what things are going to be like than you would in a normal spring game, you know. Because those guys, I always think it's funny. I've covered a few spring games now, and it's been interesting how many guys end up showing off, and especially the passing game, and you go and you get into the fall and you're barely even throwing the ball. So it's like, well, it kind of almost is in some ways good not to have it just so you don't show your hand or show a false hand and get people excited about something that's not going to happen.
I agree, you know, in that what we see is so vanilla compared to what we're going to see in the fall. But in this, as you mentioned, in this spring in particular, with a new offense and so many new faces in different places, it would have been interesting to see how it shakes out. But, you know, and that always goes back to the quarterback. But, you know, we've seen springs. Well, we saw Terry Wilson uninspiring in spring games. You know, I can't remember the last time I saw a quarterback, you know, who jumped in there and really shined. But how often do they get that opportunity? But I will tell you, Josh, one of the kids in the transfer portal who I thought was terrific in a spring game was Bryce Oliver a couple springs ago, and we never really got a chance to see him show what he could do. I'm really curious to see what he ends up doing wherever he lands.
Yeah, I was really surprised by the Bryce Oliver thing because I'll just be honest. The Cleveland Thomas is the guy that sort of emerged from that group that has ended up, you know, looks like he's going to stick around and getting a lot of praise and really impressing the coaches. It seems like if I'd have had to guess one of those receivers was going to leave, I would have just picked him just based on what, you know, what they've done up to the last couple of years. I would have just picked him. If you were just told me I had to choose one of the guys, I probably would have picked him as the one to leave, and now he's the only one that's still around.
Yeah.
So, it's you know, you wonder if, you know, with Bryce, maybe the injury, maybe there's more to that kind of held him back or took away, you know, some of his explosiveness or something. I don't want to speculate too much about that, but I mean, and I do think it's, you know, with the, obviously all the rules changing with the transfer stuff, it's really made, you know, I'm sure it's affected a lot of guys in the last year. It's affected how they think about where they want to be and what they want to get out of their lives. And, you know, I think, and some of these guys, I think they want to still play, but then maybe they start seeing kind of how their futures might play out as far as football, and maybe want to, you know, get closer to home and start establishing and making some connections there, and then maybe they want to go back and, you know, work there or whatever that might be. And so I definitely don't begrudge anybody for the change of make one a change of scenery and trying to still try to play somewhere. I don't know, it stinks when you see so many guys enter the portal, and you, I think there's only a couple that have actually found, you know, new schools, but they're certainly not alone, and Kentucky's certainly not alone. There's a lot of guys jumping in the portal and kind of being left without a place to end up.
Josh, just a couple minutes left here, but I wanted to circle back on the quarterback battle, and Will Levis, the Penn State transfer who is not on campus right now. How far behind the eight ball will he be for not being a part of spring football? Is it something where he's just going to come in and start picking up this new offense, or do you think that this could significantly impact his chances of winning the starting job?
I do think they've been able to show him, you know, get him film, you know, from the Rams and maybe even from what they've been doing in practice and they're able to kind of communicate with him, you know, quite a bit. And it sounds like he's talking to quarterbacks, and I'm sure he's got a bunch of receivers' numbers and all that stuff. I'm sure there's a lot of communication going on there between he and the people that are at Kentucky currently. I think he'll, you know, I don't know. I feel like he's going to get a chance. I mean, I think he's going to end up being, a big factor in this quarterback battle, just because I don't think a guy like that comes to Kentucky or anywhere and without some, I won't say an expectation to play, but definitely without an expectation to compete and to think he's going to get a fair shot. And I think, you know, that it seems like there's a history there a little bit with him and Cohen, so that'll affect, at least, you know, says that he'll get an opportunity to be able to have that chance. And I think he'll, you know, I do think it's pretty wide open even right now. So if it's still, you know, maybe, you know, one of these guys, you know, Allen or Joey or both of them, you know, maybe gets the edge just because they do get that, you know, this 5 weeks here to work in the system,
yeah.
And see it, you know, you get to see it with your eyes, you know, right up front. But I don't know. I feel like it seems like Levis is going to get a good shot too. So I think, you know, I do think it'll be I really think this thing is going to be like a week, you know, we'll hear maybe a week before the season,
yep.
Maybe at the earliest,
yep.
on what, you know, who's going to start.
Couldn't agree more. It's going to be a weekly headline, no quarterback yet, and then they'll finally make – but they can't wait too long because they've got to obviously make sure that the number one gets most of the reps and all that. We've covered the story before, and we'll cover it again. Whatever happens, Josh Moore will be on top of it. Follow him on Twitter, at Josh Moore HL, and I know we'll talk, I'm sure, a couple of times before then, Josh, but looking forward to seeing you in person, and I appreciate your time.
Always appreciate you guys. You're awesome.
See you, brother. And we're back in just a few here on 630 WLAP.
This is the home of the Wildcats, 630 WLAP.
Thanks again to Josh Moore. Coming up, Jake Query will talk about the hire at Indiana, and we'll talk about how it might affect the Kentucky Wildcats. But if it affects Indiana basketball, indirectly it'll affect Kentucky, because if they do the recruiting job they should be doing, then they'll start knocking heads again, I would think, on recruits. Over the weekend, and you might have missed this because of the NCAA tournament, but Kenny Payne pulled away from the DePaul job. He talked to Dwayne Peavy and officially withdrew his name from consideration on Saturday. But I don't know if you saw this, Billy, but some of the names involved, Orlando Antigua, an assistant at Illinois. Ooh. And that was part of the speculation. Damon Stoudemire, who was the coach at Pacific, Frank Martin at South Carolina, which might not be a bad fit, him going to Chicago, but also John Shire, I think is how you say his name, who's an assistant at Duke. And according to one story I read, he would be the front runner right now. Wouldn't that be something, Dwayne Peavy hiring a Duke assistant?
Oh, man. I guess. I guess it has to happen as Dwayne Peavy works his way through the ranks. I just, you know, I was sold on the idea of Peavy hiring Kenny Payne and then coming to Kentucky once Barnhart and Cal move on. So we'll have to smash that dream up and pick up the pieces.
It could still happen. And a lot of people believe that he'll go after Porter Moser, who is at Loyola in Chicago. But would that be a step up for him? No disrespect to DePaul. DePaul used to be a basketball power, but it is not right now. But like I always say, you know, jobs are what you make of them. But Moser has already proven you can play for a national championship at Loyola. Hour number two is next, 6:30 WLAP.